Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Dorothy Gundy, and Christopher Jones Cruz. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Katie Weaver will bring us this week's personal technology report. But first, a bombing in Afghanistan's capital killed at least 90 people and injured hundreds more Wednesday morning. The bomb was hidden in a truck designed to carry sewage. It exploded in the center of Kabul, near a number of foreign embassies. The Reuters news agency said it was one of the worst bombings in a city where terrorism is an ongoing threat. Afghan government officials reported the number of casualties Wednesday night, more than 12 hours after the explosion. Officials warned that the number of deaths might grow because of the large number of injuries. Alif Ahmadzai drives vehicles equipped for taking the injured to medical centers. He told the Associated Press, "I have been to many attacks, taken wounded people out of many blast sites, but I can say I have never seen such a horrible attack as I saw this morning." Most of the victims appeared to be civilians, Reuters reported. Victims included women and children, said a spokesman of the Public Health Ministry. But the dead also included Afghan security guards, including 9 guards working at the United States Embassy. The U.S. State Department said 11 American contract workers were wounded in the attack. Mohammed Hassan, 21, was attending training at a bank close to the area where the truck exploded. "It felt like an earthquake," he told Reuters. Hassan had a bandage covering his head wound, but blood covered his white dress shirt. The bomb hit the diplomatic area of Kabul, damaging many embassy buildings and vehicles. There were no early claims of responsibility. The Afghan Taliban denied responsibility. The group criticized all attacks on civilians. Security agencies in Afghanistan had been warning that militants were planning attacks on major targets for the start of Ramadan. The Muslim holy month began last week. Haraya Mossadegh is a researcher for the human rights group Amnesty International. She said, "The bombing in Kabul is a horrific act of violence and a heartbreaking reminder of the toll that Afghan civilians continue to pay in a conflict where armed groups deliberately target them and the government fails to protect them." Mossadegh said, "The explosion shows that the long war in Afghanistan is far from over and appears to be widening." Some Afghans went on social media to question if foreigners care about the continued violence they face. "Bombings in Afghanistan and the world is silent like usual," tweeted a woman known as Afghan Mises. "People wonder why we're prideful people, because we suffer in silence and alone." A man in Iraq, where there have also been recent bombings, wrote back to her, Iraq feels your pain, and we stand with Afghanistan till the end. The bombing took place near the entrance to the German embassy in Kabul. It injured several embassy workers, according to German Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel. Pictures showed the embassy building with its windows wrecked by the explosion. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani called the explosion an inhuman and cowardly attack against innocent civilians during Ramadan. In Washington, a State Department official said the attacks once again show the terrorists' complete disregard for human life.
The United States Defense Department says it has successfully tested a defense system against an intercontinental ballistic missile. The test involved two separate missile launches. The military launched an intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM, from the Marshall Islands in the Pacific Ocean. It also launched a missile from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California to intercept the ICBM. Defense officials say the test was a success. They said the second missile struck and destroyed the ICBM over the Pacific Ocean. The intercept of a complex threat representative ICBM target is an incredible accomplishment, said Vice Admiral Jim Searing, director of the U.S. Missile Defense Agency. Cedric Layton is a crisis management expert and a former U.S. Air Force intelligence officer. He told VOA that the test both sends a message and shows technological gains.
From a diplomatic standpoint, it's a tremendous message. And from a technical standpoint, it shows that there are possibilities of actually mounting a type of defense that will knock at least some intercontinental ballistic missiles out of the sky before they reach their intended targets.
He added that historically, the tests have been about 50% to 55% effective. The system tested Wednesday was designed to stop ICBMs at great distances long before they reach the U.S. The U.S. test took place after North Korea tested a short-range missile on Monday. North Korea said the test was a success. The test angered Japan, which said the missile landed in its exclusive economic zone. U.S. President Donald Trump posted on Twitter about the North Korean action. North Korea has shown great disrespect for their neighbor, China, by shooting off yet another ballistic missile, he tweeted. However, China has called for North Korea to return to talks over its disputed nuclear weapons and missile programs. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, said the U.S. will continue to pressure China on the issue of North Korea. Haley said the Trump administration believes that China is using back-channel communications with North Korea to persuade it to stop nuclear weapons testing. She said that China and the U.S. are considering increasing restrictions against the country. I'm Mario Ritter.
The United Nations humanitarian chief says Yemen has the largest food crisis in the world. Stephen O'Brien told the UN Security Council this week that more than 17 million people in Yemen struggle every day to find enough food to eat. He warned that 7 million of them are one step away from famine. Yemen's civil war started more than 2 years ago. Government forces are fighting Houthi rebels. O'Brien noted that the food crisis is man-made. He blamed the conflict for famine, disease, and death. The fighting has affected food production, especially agriculture and fishing. Food prices have increased. Many Yemenis cannot pay for food from local markets. Gulf Arab supporters of the government have blocked Yemen's main port. The blockade has slowed delivery of humanitarian aid and fuel. Yemenis are at risk of getting infected with diseases because of the famine. Currently, Yemen is trying to keep cholera from spreading. O'Brien said that cholera has affected an estimated 60,000 people and killed 500 people. He said it may cause another 150,000 cases over the next 6 months. O'Brien said the civil war is responsible for the latest outbreak of cholera. He praised the United Nations and its humanitarian partners because they are trying to contain the spread of the disease. In addition, less than 45% of Yemen's medical centers are operational. And the end of the conflict is not in sight. UN Special Envoy for Yemen, Ismail Al-Sheikh Ahmed, told Security Council members that the country is far from a comprehensive agreement. Ahmed said that the main parties are not willing to accept or discuss compromises that are needed for peace. He said their unwillingness is extremely troubling. Ahmed said that he failed to get an agreement to stop an attack on the Red Sea port of Hodeidah. The port is the main entry point for fuel and humanitarian aid. Also, over 1 million government workers have not received wages in months. That has forced families into poverty. It has added to Yemen's economic crisis. The special envoy has not escaped the violence. His vehicle was attacked in Sana'a while traveling from the airport to the UN's offices. UN officials have called for an investigation into the incident. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Josh Ness works at the Mount Carroll Home Center in the American state of Illinois. The Home Center sells many products for home improvement, tools, and farm supplies. Ness grew up in Mount Carroll, the capital of Carroll County, Illinois. He has helped farmers find what they need for the past 15 years. Ness understands the business of farming. He says the drop in grain prices over the past 2 years has hurt farmers and slowed sales at the store. "It's pretty simple," he said. "If they don't got money, they don't shop. I mean, they are not fixing as many fences. They are not buying anything new. They are just not spending." Businesses in small towns and rural areas depend on spending by farmers. If farmers reduce their spending, nearly everyone feels the effect. Any reduction affects the local feed and fertilizer store, soil testers, druggists, and the car and truck salesmen. But Ness says farmers in Carroll County understand that there are good years and bad years in agriculture. "They are itching to get back in the fields again," he said. Ness believes farmers cut back on spending last year because they were not sure about who would be elected president. He says Donald Trump's victory left a lot of people shook up. But he said most people, even many who did not vote for Trump, seem willing to give him a chance to succeed. Ness said people in his community do not listen to the political debates in Washington very closely. He said even fewer people are interested in international events, although local farmers sell a lot of their corn to other countries. There are few immigrants living in Mount Carroll, but Ness said many foreigners pass through it in the summer. The Mississippi River forms the western edge of Carroll County, and there are many places along the river to visit. Ness said he has seen many Chinese tourists during the warmer months. He said some come to his store to buy bait for fishing. Ness said the Chinese have made investments in businesses in the area and purchased some buildings in Mount Carroll. "I wonder what they are really doing," he said with a smile. China has invested heavily in American agriculture in recent years. The Chinese have bought farmland and agriculture-related industries. In 2012, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI, accused 7 Chinese nationals of stealing highly developed, specialized seeds in Illinois and Iowa. The FBI accused them of attempting to smuggle the seeds out of the country. Economic development officials working with Chinese investors say such incidents are rare. They note that China has invested billions of dollars in the United States. They say those investments have added more than 80,000 jobs to the U.S. economy.
This is What's Trending Today. Donald Trump sent out one of his most popular tweets as president just after midnight on Wednesday. It was not about jobs or fake news. It was about constant negative press. It was retweeted and liked hundreds of thousands of times before he deleted it around 6 in the morning. Suddenly, social media was filled with people wondering how to pronounce the word, and others tried to figure out what it meant. Some people thought President Trump was in the middle of writing a message and sent it by accident. Later on Wednesday morning, Trump wrote, "Who can figure out the true meaning of kofif? Enjoy." The dictionary publisher Merriam-Webster has been known to correct Trump's misspellings and misuse of words on Twitter. With this latest kofif, someone who writes tweets for the dictionary publisher wrote, "Wakes up, checks Twitter, regrets checking Twitter, goes back to bed." Based on the context, many thought it should have been coverage instead of kofif. But that did not stop people from teasing Trump about the tweet. The New York Times opinion writer Charles M. Blow wrote, "And just before you serve it, you hit it with a dash of kofif." Blow included a video that appears to show Trump adding a dash of salt to food. Other people thought kofif might be a good replacement for product names. One person wrote, "Don't talk to me before my morning kofif." Late-night television host Jimmy Kimmel, a comedian who writes jokes for a living, was sad about kofif. He wrote, "I'll never write anything funnier than kofif." Some people replaced words from famous songs with the new word kofif. Others created new Twitter profiles with the word kofif, including those of a fictional wizard and warrior. The two got into a Twitter battle with each other, each saying they were the ones summoned by Trump's tweet. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedell.
If you think your fitness tracker on your wrist is giving you a good excuse to eat that sweet treat, you may want to think again. A recent study from the Stanford University School of Medicine says fitness trackers are not accurate at tracking calories. The study says, however, that the trackers are accurate at measuring heart rate. The Stanford researchers examined measurements recorded when people were at rest and while they exercised. People are basing life decisions on the data provided by these devices, said Ewan Ashley, one of the study investigators. The study looked at 7 fitness trackers worn on the wrist. They were Apple Watch, Basis Peak version 1, Fitbit Surge, and Microsoft Band version 1. The other 3 were Mio Alpha 2, Pulson, and Samsung Gear S2. 60 participants of both sexes wore up to 4 trackers as they sat and as they exercised on a treadmill and a stationary bike. The participants were a mix of sizes and fitness levels. The trackers measured the heart rates and energy used, or calorie burn, in activities from sitting to a slow walk to a run. They also tested people cycling at different speeds. Professional medical instruments measured participants' heart and breathing rates, as well as temperature and blood pressure. The researchers compared the fitness tracker measurements to those of the gold standard medical instruments. The final report on the study was published last week. It found that none of the trackers met what researchers considered an acceptable error rate for energy use measurement. The acceptable error rate is 5% or less. The researchers wrote that the Fitbit Surge was the most accurate tracker of energy use. It had a 27.4% average error rate. The study found the Pulson to be the least accurate tracker, with a 92.6% error rate. The error rate was higher for males than for females, with all fitness trackers tested. The average error rate for all the trackers studied under all forms of exercise was 4% higher for males than for females. The good news is the tested fitness trackers were accurate at measuring heart rate. All but one of the trackers met the acceptable error rate limit in heart rate measurement. Of the trackers studied, the Apple Watch was the most accurate at measuring heart rate, with an average error rate of 2%. The Samsung Gear S2 was the least accurate, with an average error rate of close to 7%. For both the measurement of energy used and heart rate, the researchers said the Apple Watch had the most favorable error profile, while the Samsung Gear S2 had the least. The Stanford researchers are continuing their investigation of fitness trackers. Next, they will test participants wearing fitness trackers during their daily lives and while exercising outside the laboratory. The full study is available online at the Journal of Personalized Medicine. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.